Friday is here at last, so of course we're looking back at the week of news. Today on CityCast Las Vegas, I'm here with co-host David Figler and Nevada Independent reporter Jacob Solis, and we're talking about updates to the A's relocation plans, the GOP caucus mess, and, wait for it, Nachogate! It's Friday, January 26th. I'm Sarah Lohman, and here's what Las Vegas is talking about. All right. Good morning, everybody.
Happy Friday, everybody.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
There you go.
So we've got some interesting sticky situations out there. Let's begin with the Oakland A's. They held a sort of fireside chat yesterday. What was the purpose of this event, David?
Well, John Fisher, the heir to the Gap clothing fortune, the owner of the currently hapless Oakland A's and the Bay Area's villain of the moment, gave a less than rousing 15-minute talk with the head of the Las Vegas Chamber of Commerce in front of about 1,500 people who paid $125 each to sit in a room at the Fountain Blue to listen to sunny economic forecasts and general cheerleading for unbridled capitalism. The Fisher talk itself didn't really break any new ground, but with Fisher here in the city for the first time in such a very public way, we did learn some things about his philosophy, which was pretty generic. Basically, be good in the community like the Golden Knights, which he did reference quite a bit. Luckily, there were a couple of journalists after the fireside chat who asked him more pointed questions, which came out in various articles all over the place. But while they were interesting answers, also not very direct. At the talk, though, we did hear an intriguing self-own where Fisher said the success of a baseball team depends on connecting with the community and winning to drive up revenue so you could keep the good team together. And then he sort of concluded that by saying, and the A's just haven't been doing that, as though he hasn't been the owner for 20 years. He's kind of blaming it on the A's and not him, which, you know, owns A's. Anyway, at one point, he gave a shout out to our local minor league baseball team, the Aviators, which got a huge response from the crowd.
That's nice.
And then the MC came out after they were done and said something to the crowd like, the Las Vegas A's, how great does that sound? Which was greeted with crickets.
Let's give it up one more time for Mary Beth and John Fisher, please. The Las Vegas A's. We like the sound of that, right, Vegas? Yeah. Yes? Are we alive back there? Las Vegas, how we feeling? Okay, we already know the Vegas sports economy is really
so that was the fireside chat.
I just freaking love Vegas's love of like our minor league teams, our hockey team, our WNBA. Like, I just love it. We're just such underdogs and there's such passion. And just love for these teams. It's awesome. So do you think, David, we'll stick with you for just a minute, but do you think that like that Fisher made the case that the A's belong in Vegas during his chat?
Well, I mean, like everyone else who gives ambiguous answers and promises tons of money and absolute success without really giving detailed plans. Yeah, he fits right into Las Vegas. It's like everyone else. You know, lots of holes remaining in the plan and the strategy that were not addressed in the fireside chat. And even when journalists, like I said, afterwards were talking to him, he seemed to be really evasive. I mean, we don't even know if they're really on track to start in 2028, as was indicated. He gave some really wishy-washy answers. I mean, it's really funny because every news report of reporters who talked to him backstage afterwards seemed like they each got one question and that's all they reported about. So you kind of have to stitch them all together.
Oh, but you get a whole conversation.
Yeah, but you still don't get like a straight answer. Like a lot of questions still remain.
Jacob, did you catch the chat yesterday?
I did. Well, I at least caught, you know, all of the reporting afterward.
Yeah.
And that one clip on Twitter of, who loves the Las Vegas A's? No one in that room.
Oh, God.
And that was the pro sports economy crowd for sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, like you said, David, there's so much that just needs to be settled. And there's just a lot of like strangeness. For one, the renderings have been like a big sticking point for a long time, right? They released these renderings during the legislative session that are obviously not real. Like there's no way those renderings could exist in this 9-acre parcel of land that's actually tucked on the back corner of where the Tropicana currently is. And it's like, the rest of the lot is still owned by Bally's, which say they're going to replace the Tropicana. And so it's like, okay, well, what's that going to look like? Where's the park going to be? And we still don't know. And they say that's what the rendering holdup is now. And they were supposed to actually release new renderings last month, but they delayed because of the shooting at UNLV. But okay, it's been almost 6 weeks-ish, right?
Yeah, well, Jacob,
still no renderings.
And before that, they were supposed to release it in November, but there was, you know, the unfortunate incident with the Nevada State Troopers who were killed on the road. And so, like, what were they going to do if those things didn't happen? Were they going to show up and say, oh, we don't have the renderings? It doesn't seem legit. That the delay does not seem legit.
So it seems like the A's are not making the community inroads that they really need to. But, like, so what, I mean, I'm going to ask this question, but it sounds like the answer is everything. What more should they be doing?
If they had a shovel in the ground, that would probably help allay people's fears. Mm-hmm. Like, I think part of the problem is it's just so nebulous. Nothing's actually happened right now that it just feels like phantasmal at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, same thing with the financing. The state and the county together have given them a significant public funding package, but they need a lot more money to build a stadium. And the questions just keep getting deflected to the point where now he's saying, well, we're thinking about maybe taking on minority interests, which means opening up for new revenue streams, which doesn't seem like they have their financing together. I don't think anyone asked them directly, where is the financing right now? The answers that were given were just so ambiguous. We're leveraging our family's equity. We're thinking about opening up to minority ownership, et cetera, et cetera. It's like transparency is what they need to do.
They're trying to convince us that they're not a mess, but they continue to seem like a mess.
Yeah, there's a degree of if they build it, they will come. Well, they haven't built anything yet, right? Like with the Knights, right? Everyone sort of latched onto the Knights immediately, I think, in 2017 for obvious reasons, October 2017 being a generally bad time. But T-Mobile Stadium already existed when they started to make the bid to the NHL.
Yeah.
Okay, we want a hockey expansion in Las Vegas, right? With the A's, this move is just so much more nebulous than anything that happened with the Raiders or the Aces or literally any other sports team that has interest in this town. So I think that's why people are a lot more skeptical.
I mean, that's the thing too, is he says, well, we just need to have a winning team and we'll be successful. But he didn't answer why they don't have a winning team.
Why aren't you winning in Oakland? Yeah. I would put money that we're going to get an NBA expansion before we get the A's in Vegas. And I think people are going to be a hell of a lot happier about an NBA team here. Okay. So last thoughts on this topic. Were there any questions that were not asked at this? I'm calling it a chat. I guess it's a press conference. Was there anything that wasn't asked that you wish someone had been able to ask?
So for me, I mean, there were questions that were asked, but the answers just feel unsatisfactory, right? So certainly reporters after the fact asked John Fisher about like, okay, well, where's the financing? What's the holdup? And he gave, you know, answers of like, yeah, let's explore minority ownership or, you know, where are the renderings? Okay, well, Bally's is working on, you know, new renderings for the new Tropicana or what have you. So we'll have them then. But it's like, that doesn't really explain why we, you know, Where were the old renderings? I mean, we really don't know. So that's what I want to know.
Yeah, the one question I'm very curious about is where they're going to be playing in the interim. He shouted out the Aviators. The Aviator Stadium seems like it would be a perfect spot, but they're looking a lot of other places. And then there's also the whole idea of how much lost revenue they're going to have from broadcasting if they move out of the Bay Area, and he didn't answer that. So many unanswered questions, Sarah.
The other big thing that's happening right now is that it is primary season. So who is this guy, Ryan Binkley, and why is he running in the GOP caucus? Jacob, can you enlighten us?
Yeah. So just to lay the groundwork here, right? Nevada is going to have both a Republican primary and a Republican caucus. The Republican primary will not count for delegates and is mostly meaningless and symbolic. That's where Nikki Haley, the only real candidate running against Donald Trump right now, is running, quote unquote, running. Now, the caucus will matter. That will award delegates for the Republican National Convention. And so the only person left there is Donald Trump. And for some reason, like you mentioned, Ryan Binkley. Now, he is a Texas pastor and CEO of a bank down there. It's like an investment in M&A, mergers and acquisitions bank. And he wants to be president. And he is inexplicably still in the race.
Should people care who Ryan Binkley is?
I mean, look, if you would like to care who Ryan Binkley is, you can. He's not going to win Nevada. That is for certain. Just to put it in context, he came, I believe, in fifth in Iowa with about 700 votes. But fourth was Vivek Ramaswamy, who had about 7,000 votes. So just for comparison. In New Hampshire, he did worse. I haven't seen the last check, but I know like the list of people who got more votes than him include like Vermin Supreme, the guy who wears a boot on his head. I think Nikki Haley got more votes in the Democratic primary than Binkley did in the Republican one. So I think it's safe to say that if it's just him and Trump on Nevada's caucus ballot, and it is literally just him and Trump, Trump is going to win. And I think Binkley's theory of the case, we'll call it. And I talked to him, right? I spoke to him on Tuesday ahead of the New Hampshire primary. He basically told me, like, look, we know it'll take a miracle, right? But I think I can unify the Republican Party. And whether or not you believe him, I guess, is a personal decision.
Jacob, why don't you shout out that article?
Yeah. So you can read on the NevadaIndependent.com. Ryan Binkley is the only candidate still running against Trump in Nevada's GOP caucus. Why? Question mark. That is what I wrote yesterday.
Jacob, has he been to Nevada at all during this presidential campaign? And what is he? Who's he found to talk to?
Not yet. He is coming, I believe, next week. So he is finally getting here. When I asked him about a couple Nevada-specific issues, one, I should say he did say Nevada multiple times.
Oh, no.
And so
damn it.
There's one thing. But also, I mean, you know, I asked him about, say, like water levels in Lake Mead. Do you think the federal government should be more involved? And he said, I'm going to have to look more into that. I asked him about Yucca Mountain. And he said, well, no, I don't. We should have more nuclear energy, but I don't want to reopen Yucca. And then I asked him about, you know, lands bills, right? Lands bills in Clark and Washoe, letting the cities buy federal land for development. Yeah. He just sort of generally said, yeah, sure, let's the cities buy more land. I think that there's some Nevada-specific stuff he's going to want to run on. But a lot of his platform, frankly, I think mirrors a lot of what other Republicans say. If it's about immigration, if it's about the national debt, right? Like, I think the difference is he just thinks that Trump and other Republicans haven't actually done anything. And so in his plan, he would get all this done.
Does he get one vote in Nevada in that caucus?
He might. Now, the thing about the caucus is because, like, it's not like the New Hampshire primary where I think New Hampshireites, Granite Staters, whatever you call them, are what I would call big democracy freaks. They just love voting. So it's like they have one bajillion write-ins. They just love to write in dudes, whoever. Nevada, the caucus, the barrier for entry for the caucus is actually quite high. You had to have been a registered Republican as of about a month ago. And you're going to have to spend, you know, a good chunk, like several hours of your Thursday night next month going to a caucus site that it might actually be pretty hard to find, depending on when and where you look.
And you need voter ID. Boy, they're going to be sticklers.
Yeah. And you need voter ID. You got to show up in person. Yeah. And so it's a higher barrier to entry, we call it. So maybe there's some really dedicated Binkley heads vote for him.
Well, if someone could prove that they voted for Binkley just because it's so outrageous in this scenario, I will buy them a Bud Light at any bar of their choice. Yeah,
but not even the best of the light beers.
No, specifically a Bud Light.
go ahead, Jacob.
No, I'll just put it this way. So Nikki Haley has literally not even acknowledged Nevada's existence in her official speeches.
Oh, no.
Like her campaign manager put out a state of play document that said, next up is South Carolina. Next up is literally not South Carolina. It's literally Nevada. Something that Donald Trump had to point out in a speech that same night during New Hampshire. It's been like a whole thing.
It's not
so
a good move.
Do not expect Nikki Haley to show up here in the next month is what I'm saying.
Jacob, I thought that your velvety deep voice was going to make me less anxious hearing about politics, but it's not working. I'm extremely anxious
so sorry.
Right now.
Yeah.
So Trump has said he's already won Nevada. You know, do we still matter as in the primaries? Like, are we still the we matter state?
Okay, so I think there's two ways to answer this. In sort of like a general, like, is the electorate still a battleground state? Does Nevada matter? In broad terms, yes, right? In the general election, these six electoral votes that we have are probably going to be one of the hinge points. We're going to be one of the seven states that are going to decide the presidential election in November. Now, the primaries have been weird, just to lay it out there. Trump is running as a functional incumbent. That's very strange. You normally don't get a challenging party, out-of-office party, with a quasi-incumbent like Trump. The other thing is his team has spent months laying the groundwork for a sort of backroom strategy that allows Trump to have the kind of advantage that he has right now in Nevada. A lot of the Nevada party apparatus is very friendly with Trump. The party chair, Michael McDonald, is one of the fake electors who's been indicted for trying to, like, get, you know, do January 6th, we'll say that way. Go to our website, learn more about fake electors. But essentially, like, there's a lot of party folks in Nevada who are explicitly pro-Trump. And so the party rules, I mean, even deciding to have a caucus in the first place and not doing the state-run primary, because that, by law, if two people sign up for the primary, there is a primary. That was a decision designed to favor Trump.
I mean, the one thing that I really want to point out is that I think to her peril, Nikki Haley is ignoring Nevada because not just the party apparatus, but, you know, Governor Joe Lombardo, the highest ranking Republican in the state, has come out not only endorsing Trump, but encouraging people to go to the state run primary and vote none of the above to humiliate basically Nikki Haley, because, you know, Nikki Haley has, you know, such a narrow path to become the nominee that every little bit would count. And I think she's counting on some manner of momentum, saying, well, at least she won the state primary, even though it doesn't result in any delegates. But if she gets beat by none of the above, which is a quirky Nevada thing that we have here, I can't imagine coming back from that. That's a headline that no matter what else is happening in South Carolina or other, you know, big states, that's gotta leave a mark.
Yeah. And I think one wrinkle here that people might not be thinking about is it's almost 2.5 weeks between Nevada and South Carolina. There is so much time for people to fixate on little stuff. Like you say, hypothetically, Nikki Haley loses to none of the above. If that happens, and Trump wants it to happen, Trump is going to be here on Saturday in Las Vegas for the opening of early voting for a primary ballot that he's not on. And the purpose is to make sure that people vote none of the above. That people get it, that Republicans, right, get it.
Well, this is a nightmare. So let's talk about something stupid instead. Y'all, Nachogate. So here's the scandal. On January 22nd, a Twitter, I guess X user, Moo Tiger Mike, tweeted that they waited for, and this is news, David, stop your laughing. We waited an hour for food in the sports book, and this is our nachos. So I'm sure that a lot of people have seen this photo because it's at least 1.2 million people have viewed it as of this recording. But a brief description, and I really have analyzed it, gentlemen, in my professional food writer opinion.
Nice.
So you might think that maybe they ate some of the nachos and then took a photo of it. But the plate does look very clean. I would say that the nachos look as though they were individually topped, like with a little chorizo and cheese, although they look very dried out. And the sauces are completely untouched. So it does, for all appearances, seem to be that there is a plate delivered with six individual nachos and four sauces. It's almost as many sauces as nachos. So, I mean, that sounds pretty bad. And the chips do look pretty disgusting. But the worst part about it is that these six chips cost $24, allegedly cost $24, which doesn't seem that overpriced to me for a quote-unquote luxury dessert on the strip. But what do you all think? David, you went in person to Sportsbook. You did some real gumshoe reporting.
Yes.
Down on the ground and ordered the nachos in Sportsbook.
I did. Giving it my all for CityCast and our listeners. So I forced myself to eat nachos in a sports bar in the Fountain Blue. Here's the first thing I'm going to say. It was packed in there. And almost everyone around me was ordering nachos. And I don't know if this is just kind of And I ordered the nachos. They were $21. I think there was $21. Oh, I have the actual receipt. Give me 1 second. I promise it'll be super quick.
Bye, David. Oh, my. I mean, I guess I could say in the meantime that David did text a photo of the nachos and they did look a lot better. It was like a pile of nachos with the sauces appropriately, like, you know, slopped on top.
Yeah, all I want to get that right. Sorry.
How much was it?
It was $21.
Okay. $3 less.
So, and I'm just going to start by saying freaking delicious. They were really, really all good. Right. There was an entire avocado worth of guacamole on top.
The chips, photo you sent last night over text looked nothing like the Twitter photo.
Yeah. All that guacamole, the chips were crisp, the beans were good. It was kind of a cheesy sauce on the bottom there that was actually almost like a bechamel. It was so good and tasty. It came with like a little tray of the dippers. So it was like a salsa, sour cream, and jalapenos, you know, fine. And we tore through it. It was really, really good. I did talk to the bartender.
I don't know. I suspect they've upped their game.
I talked to the bartender and I was like, you know, how weird has this been? And he's like, social media sucks. That was his response.
Why do you think the bartender said that social media sucks?
Oh, because I don't know. I think they were trying something at the bar, which is called the Tavern, which is sort of the restaurant bar that is inside the sports book. And they were doing something. He said it was like they were trying to like recreate a slider with the nachos. But basically, they were just as delicious before. They tasted good. They looked a little different. And I think he said social media sucks because, you know, it made them like react and everyone was getting outraged at them and they were getting a lot of hate towards it. And I think his point was it was a good product before. It's a great product now. Social media really just kind of tinkered with things for no good reason. Although looking around, everyone was eating those nachos.
But those didn't look like good nachos. But let me ask you this, Jacob.
There was chicken in it too, by the way.
Okay.
Chicken. Okay.
Well, that makes it better. Yeah.
Well, no, it was like little bits of smoked chicken in it. It was quite
smoked
delicious.
Actually does no, I, no, that does actually make it better. I'm being
I'm
serious.
Just laughing at Jacob's reaction.
Yeah.
What is your most overpriced, underwhelming experience in Las Vegas, Jacob? Go.
So I have a good answer to this, which is that I've never been underwhelmed because I'm a tiny baby who relies on recommendations from other people to make sure that I'm not disappointed. So I'm not adventurous enough to find the disappointment myself.
I think that's good. Time is money. You know, we're only on this earth so long. Like, I would also rather go somewhere that someone's like, no, this is amazing. Recommendations aren't always foolproof, though. I will say that. What about you, David? Most expensive, overpriced, underwhelming?
There have been some immersive film productions, some over at like Area 15 that were really expensive. And then inside it was just like, you know, is that all there is to an immersive film? So that was kind of a disappointment. I'm going to actually focus right back on the Fountain Blue because we went there on Christmas Day and went to the cute little center bar. Very, very fancy. They have the $19 cocktails there. And you'd expect a superior craft cocktail program from such a high-end resort. And I'm going to tell you, it was a drink that had some cava in it, and that cava came out 100% flat. I don't know if they just had an open bottle that they'd just been sitting on all day or whatever. It was just juicy. It had no complexity. There was nothing to it. I didn't take a picture of it because I'm not that guy. But, you know, maybe they would have a better one now if they did with more guacamole in it.
I think my most overpriced, underwhelming experience is just any given slot machine. It's just so shocking how quickly your money goes away. And it's just like
Buffalo.
No, my favorite one was one of my first times in Vegas. There was a Betty White slot machine and she like read from you from a nighttime storybook. That was worth
the price. I think that's a fever dream. Oh, yeah. That was a fever dream.
No, it was 100% real. I'm going to dig up the photo. I haven't seen one since. But in general, they're just like not entertaining at all. No, I was there. There were witnesses. Betty White read to me from a book and it was a slot machine. That was worth the money. Every other one, it's just like
a lot of those themed slot machines though. The Big Bang Theory and you get the bazinga around or whatever. It's just like, kill me.
God. I did a Little Shop of Horrors one that was also entertaining in the experience, but like, it's still so brief.
Feed me quarters, Sarah.
Didn't say that? Didn't even. It would just burst into song and you'd get like suddenly Seymour between. Aww. Yeah, it was cute. But again, the experience is like just so dull in general. I'd rather play the tiny mechanical horses at the D.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way to do it. Frankly, anytime I enter a theme slot machine, I start dissociating. There's simply no way to actually live presently and interact with a theme slot machine, in my view.
No,
although,
no.
$1 million idea, CityCast Las Vegas themed slot machine.
I'm
and then
sure
there could actually
a
be a
money.
Bonus round where you get like Nevada indie contributors like Jacob popping on to like give you a chance at millions.
I'll do it.
Oh my God.
I should get people to pay me to review slot machines now that you mention it.
Now we're talking.
You know what? Congratulations on the new Envy Indie podcast talking about politics, talking about the election.
Yeah.
But I think that a side shoot of that should be you and me talking about slot machines. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Anytime, just let me know. Yeah.
Definitely a great feature.
Yeah, give a little pitch to your own the new podcast.
Yeah, that's right. We just launched a brand new politics podcast. It's called On the Trail with the Nevada Independent. It's hosted by me, and it has a rotating cast of all of our election reporters where we're going to dig into sort of behind the headlines, right? What do we not get to stick in the stories? Right now, we're going to run through the presidential caucuses for the next couple of weeks. So yeah, listen, you can find it on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and wherever you find your podcast, you can find it on YouTube, and new episodes drop every Thursday afternoon, so you can listen when you drive home or first thing Friday morning.
Yay.
On YouTube, like it's a film podcast? We can see you?
Yeah, regrettably. Yeah, I have to keep my camera on for that. Joey makes me, our podcast producer.
I only associate that with like misogynist morning shows, so I do expect boobies, I guess.
Yeah, we're diversifying. Well, we got to make sure that we can cut clips for TikTok, I've been told. So.
Oh, yeah. My God, it's a whole
Savvy.
New world.
All right.
Well,
thing.
I'm super interested in listening. I also just want to shout out before we go, the James Beard Awards for chefs and restaurants were announced yesterday, and actually Las Vegas like really got recognized. So among the businesses recognized were Anima, who David, that was like one of your favorite restaurants you went to last year, yeah.
Yep.
Milkfish Bake Shop, Milpa, who we featured on a previous CityCast episode, Sparrow and Wolf, and Aroma Latin American Cochina. Or Cocina. So, thank you both. It was so nice to spend the morning with you.
Totally fun.
Thank you.
That's all for today here on CityCast Las Vegas. Our producers this week are Sonia Cho Swanson, Leila Mohammed, and Lizzie Goldsmith. Our newsletter editor is Scott Dickensheets, and Adrian Gonzalez was our roving newsletter editor this week. Your hosts are David Figler and me, Sarah Lohman. Music is by OG, Moose, Epidemic Sound, and all the kimonos. We record this show in the traditional homelands of the Nuwuvi, the Southern Paiute people. And if you enjoyed this show, why not tell a friend? Rate the show, leave us a review, and subscribe to our morning newsletter, Hey Las Vegas. We'll be back Monday morning with more news from around the city. Take care. I feel like everyone is open to believing that this is real because, like, Fountain Blue in general seems like a messy bitch that lives for drama.